And we've had so many of those moments.
Yeah.
You know, of we're the ultimate underdog, where it's the world against us, and we either triumph over evil and win, or it's robbed from us for some reason.
Yeah.
It seems like that is like a big, big narrative in the things that happen, and I feel that way a lot of the times.
Welcome to episode 11 of the RVA Ram News VCU Basketball Podcast. I'm Ross Catro.
I'm Aaron Williams.
And this week we're going to mostly focus on the St. Joe's loss that's still fresh in my sad mind. We're going to talk about Rhode Island a little bit too. We'll do trivia, and then we'll look at the two big upcoming games against George Washington and St. Louis, both of which are huge deals. And really stressful to me. So we'll dig into that. But first, let's spend like 2 quick seconds on Rhode Island before we jump into the heartbreaking St. Joe's game.
Oh, what was that? I fell asleep just thinking about that game. No, I mean, it was... You know, one of the things that I like about VCU being in the Atlantic 10, especially this year where it's so strong from top to bottom, is it really feels like there are no off nights. You know, in the CAA, especially... In 2011-12, it just felt like every night they were playing a game. It's like, if they lose this, they have everything to lose.
Yeah.
You know, if they win this, it's just business as usual. If they win it by 20, then that's a nice feeling. This season, you know, it hasn't been that way. There's so many good teams in the A-10. Rhode Island, unfortunately, is just one of those games this season where it didn't seem like the Rams had much to gain out of it other than taking care of business and focusing on getting better. They were very good on defense in the first half. They held Rhode Island to 21 points. Coach Smart went to the bench in the second half. It was nice seeing some guys have good games. You know, Melly Cox had a bunch of free throws, and just to see some of the bench players get minutes. But other than that, it wasn't a particularly interesting game.
And Rhode Island played 8 players. They might only have 8 players, right?
they basically have 8 scholarship players right now because of people leaving the team and injuries and whatnot.
They had 4 players that played 36 minutes or more, which is a lot of minutes.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was what St. Joseph's did.
So, well, okay, let's talk about St. Joe's.
Over the Rhode Island game, let's talk about St. Joseph's.
Well, that's what we all want to talk about.
You either want to talk... I think there are 2 camps on this one. Yeah, talk about it a ton, or never talk about it ever again.
I'm going to talk about it a ton.
I
think we need to talk about it. I think we need to ask some questions and hopefully alleviate some of the... Like, my tendency after a loss like this is... okay, well, that's that. Like, I have a hard time looking at what I saw against St. Joseph's and then looking at the upcoming schedule, which is at home versus George Washington, away versus St. Louis, away...
Massachusetts.
And then back home... No, away again.
At Fordham.
Yeah. And then Richmond comes up after that, at away. So it's like a...
I mean, this is... I put my comment... I was making my CPR comments earlier today. And I think my thing was VCU could finish 16-0 at home and 8-8 on the road this year.
Yeah.
Or that those numbers. I mean, 8-8 on the road easily, because it's gonna take a lot for them to beat St. Louis. That Richmond game, Coach Smart has never won in the Robins Center, and the UMass game. All 3 of those games made me very nervous. If they lose those 3, then they're 8-8 on the road. But I think it's even more likely that they'll go undefeated at home. So it's I'm not too optimistic about the upcoming games.
And so this St. Joe's game, we talked last week about the Rams were winning at home. They hadn't lost any games away that they shouldn't have lost, and they had stolen a couple. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was Sal game was stealing a couple. But this St. Joe's game was, what do you think? Is this a game that is a loss that they shouldn't have had, or was it a stolen game went unstolen?
There's so many ways to to carve this one up, because in some senses, it may have been literally stolen by the refs and the bad call. In some cases, it could have been stolen, as in St. Joseph isn't as good a team as VCU, and they maybe stole one. In some ways, VCU could have coughed it up by just not playing as assertively as they would have liked, and Coach Smart said things to that nature after the game. So, I mean, you can look at it a million different ways. You know, I'm kind of over the bad call. Now I'm stuck with this thing of, like, man, VCU didn't play that well.
Yeah.
And if they play that way against Richmond, if they play that way against St. Louis, if they play that way against UMass, then all of a sudden we're back talking about, are they going to get a bye in Brooklyn? Whereas a week ago we were talking about, can they win this thing? Can they compete for the top of St. Louis?
Yeah, and it didn't, it wasn't, I mean, the game count came down to the last play. But,
well, it wasn't the last play.
You're right. The game came down to less than the final minute. It was decided in the less than the final minute. But, like you said, the play throughout was not great by
the
Rams.
Not at all.
And atypical, too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like, I mean, the big thing in the first half was the second chance points by St. Louis. It just seemed like, it was like kind of like the George Washington game. They gave up too many 50-50 balls. They didn't force enough turnovers. They looked like they were out-hustled. And they let a couple, you know, that Patricio Guarino had one of those games. He scored a lot of points, but he did the same kind of thing where it was like, he had a lot of hustle plays. He had a lot of rebounds. He forced some turns. He blocked some shots. Halil Kanasevic did kind of the same thing, except for he didn't score as many points. But it's just sort of like this multi-dimensional big man that just messed with them the entire game, if that makes sense.
And how does that affect people? Because, like, Briante didn't have a great game. I mean, he had a good game, but some of his Briante-ness was lacking, I thought. And is that forced by the style of play of St. Joe's, or is it just another symptom of being like out of whack?
I actually liked his energy watching him.
Uh-huh.
He didn't get a lot of steals, but he was just, you could just in the press, he looked the most energetic to me. He looked really energetic to me. Jared Guest looked really energetic to me.
Yeah, totally.
The press, they just didn't force turnovers, and, you know, that's understandable. I mean, when you have a team, you know, a guy like, when you have a couple of good guards and then, like, one other guy that can, like, handle the press like that, that's not too bothersome. It was really the half court that bothered me.
Yeah.
Defensive possessions aren't over until you get a rebound, and they just didn't do it. They'd play, like, you sent me a message, and you were like, man, VC's playing a great 31-second defense right now.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, you know, a lot of times, I mean, Kanasevic finished with 7 assists, right? And it's like, it seemed like he had a lot of ways to beat them and find his teammates open layups. And they just weren't finishing out possessions on the defensive end.
And if there's one defensive possession that really sticks out in my mind, it was a 3 by someone down, like, in the corner, and the guy from St. Joe's not only was open but had hours to shoot. Like, he got the ball, and, like, there were several Rams around, and it was kind of like, he's going to shoot that 3.
That Will Weaver was complaining about it after the shot. You know, I didn't think anyone was in a position to. I remember Will Weaver saying something about it, and then my thought was like, man, they let him get open, but I wasn't too upset with the fact that no one closed down because they weren't going to get it. I was more upset that just the rebound. I mean, you play undersized, that's fine, you know, and they've done a good job of, like, playing defense in the half court recently, and this was, like, all of their worst fears being realized at once.
Yeah.
And that being said, you know, they did put themselves in a position to win at the end, and I think they probably would have if that one call had gone the other way.
Yeah, so let's talk about Trevion Graham a little bit. It's, again, another case of him kind of being like, yo, we're not going to lose this game.
And it's
worked so far.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing where I've talked about before, where he was invisible. Not invisible. He was...
Well, he was like 2 of 11, I think, before the final 4 minutes.
And like I said a bunch of times, that guy is indispensable. And it's crazy to me that he's only a junior. And it blows my mind that he will be around again for another year, because he is so indispensable now. But, like, it would be sure super duper if he could be indispensable earlier on in the game. Think would be just great. And I don't know what that is, and I don't even know if it matters as much as I feel like it matters, but, man, I'd love to see him get 6 points in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I've got to give the Hawks credit because they're a great shot blocking team, and they, I mean, how many times
they were all over the place?
How many times it just seemed like VCU was going to make a move, and
yeah,
they just rejected a Bradford Burgess shot or
in like crushing and embarrassing ways,
right? Yeah,
like
that's what I'm saying.
Demoralizing blocks.
It was more than like, and I think that's part of the problem. Coach Smart talks about this all the time. Like, there are a couple guys on the team who want to help so badly that when something like that happens, they can't get over it. And it's like there are blocks that affect one possession,
yeah,
and then there are blocks that affect multiple possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like those six blocks affected more than six possessions, you know, just because it
definitely
it just
they're all very athletic. Mm-hmm. Highlight dunk or blocks,
yeah, you know, where they ended up in like the
yeah
fifth row or something like that, you know. And a couple of the guys, they want to help the team so bad, like they can't get over that kind of stuff. And I don't know, that's not necessarily what happened with Trayvon Graham. I think he's pretty good at getting over stuff.
Yeah, I don't think he even has to get over, because I don't think he's affected by any
yeah.
of that stuff.
He's so
care.
Nonchalant about things, where I think like Rob Brandenburg's that way. Although this is the thing about Rob Brandenburg that really surprised me about looking at this box score, is he attempted one shot in
yep.
26 minutes. And you yep. know, usually it's like, well, he doesn't really take bad shots, he just doesn't finish the good shots that he takes at a rate that I think some of us would expect from him. But I mean
I think that stood out to me in the box score as well. He's like a senior starter, and his like look at his stat line.
His usage percentage is 1%. So he played 26 minutes, he had 3 points, he attempted 1 3-pointer and made it. He had 2 defensive rebounds, 2 personal fouls.
Yeah, like what was he doing for 26 minutes? And I know there's lots of stuff that he's probably doing.
Right, yeah. I mean, not everything shows up in the box score,
yeah.
and that's not the ultimate judgment of whatever, but I mean, And a lot of it has to do with, I think, you know, him and a lot of VCU's players kind of come in pairs.
Yeah.
And sort of his pair, his counterpart, is Melvin Johnson. Melvin Johnson had a really, really strong game
mm-hmm.
with a lot of possessions that he used up on offense. So, like, I get it. But that just kind of stood out to me. Like,
yeah.
I should have gone back and looked to see how long it had been since he had taken one shot, because I guarantee it's probably freshman year.
Yeah.
I mean, Trayvon Graham took over. He scored 8 out of 10 points during that 10-0 run. He got robbed. It's time to move on, because they can't dwell on it, because it's brutal. The next 2 games are brutal. The rest of the season's brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't... The outside of the game at Fordham, every single game is losable for them.
St. Bonaventure at home.
St. Bonaventure's good.
Yeah.
This is the... I mean, on senior night, no. Or senior day or whatever
yeah.
it is. I mean, no, but it's losable for them.
Yeah.
Hey, do you know the last time they lost on senior day? And you know who they lost to?
No.
This is 2011. They lost to JMU.
Oh, that's right. It seems crazy now.
So, it seems crazy now. It seems crazy now because then they went to... That was like their lowest moment before going to the Final Four, but This is the thing. This is why I had the tone that I had in my article, because VCU is not entitled to any win. And sometimes it feels like that. And we've had so many of those moments.
Yeah.
You know, of we're the ultimate underdog, where it's the world against us, and we either triumph over evil and win, or it's robbed from us for some reason.
Yeah.
It seems like that is like a big, big narrative in the things that happen, and I feel that way a lot of the times, you know. But then I have to take a step back and go, "Man, that's because I'm spoiled."
Yeah, I think that's an amazing transition to talk about what I want to talk about next, and we can just edit this out if it's terrible. but I think what you're talking about, that narrative of the VCU basketball program, is a sustainable narrative—the narrative of being the underdog—and when you triumph, it really is like a David and Goliath thing. Like, you've triumphed over evil. And when you don't, to have been snatched from your deserving hands by also evil. You know, like, that's a thing that's sustainable and has been true for the short term. And it's sustainable as long as you're an underdog. When you cease to be an underdog, I don't think you can maintain that as your program's narrative. And we've talked about this a bunch before, and I think that Virginia Tech football suffers from the same sort of thing, and I think they handle it pretty okay, where they were nothing. You know, they were in, like, the A-10 at one point, I think, in football, right? Or the Metro or something, like conferences that maybe don't even exist. And then, like, went to the national championship, like, in an underdog role, and then won 10 games for a million years in a row.
Yeah.
And, like, are no longer at a point, well, until recently, but we're no longer at a point where your whole identity can be an underdog. Like, at some point, you have to beat Michigan in the Sugar Bowl because you are the favored team, you know? And it's interesting to me, I'm rambling a little bit, but it's interesting to me to see how VCU fans react when presented with defeat in ways that, like, you can't really, you can't put this game, I don't think you can put this game, St. Joe's game, you can't say that it was stolen from the Rams. Like,
I agree with that 100%.
The Rams are not the underdog in this game. They are the favorites.
They were the favorites to win the conference.
Yeah, they were ranked 10.
Yeah.
Preseason. That's insane. And, like, to how fans react and deal with it, how the program deals with not meeting expectations and not fulfilling this role of the favorite, I think is really fascinating. I'm not sure that the transition will be smooth.
So I guess I got a question for you because I don't really follow college football at all.
Yeah.
Is the internal culture at Virginia Tech that way?
Which way?
Just like, we're still the underdog, we're still...
No.
Okay. Because I don't feel that way about VCU at all. I think the person who has the best tone on this is Coach Smart. You know, and he's constantly saying things to the media of, you know, like, you know, sometimes you guys think that we're just supposed to walk in and it's easy for no matter who we're playing. Or, you know, like, for all these games. And it's like, it's never easy, you know. And you have to go win games. You have to make the plays.
Yeah.
And I think there was a certain point. I mean, it's not like anyone's fault. It's just this extreme, extreme, extreme situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool because, like, all these mid-major, lower major teams, or upper mid-major teams are making the Final Four now, but, like, VCU did it in such a dramatic fashion and fueled by that, like, no one believes in us kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to remember that, like, while the players knew that there's a lot of, like, talk about them that way, those guys entered every game thinking that they were I mean, they definitely had, like, an us against the world thing, but they had this idea of, like, they were the best, but they had to earn it. You know what I'm saying? I don't think Joey Rodriguez ever felt like this. Someone just stole this from me.
Yeah.
Because for him, it was like, I need to go take this.
Right.
And I'm not... This is not the player's fault, but I feel like the perception of the fan base sometimes, or what I see on social media, and this is not to be said that about everyone, but, like, the second a bad call goes against VCU, it's the world trying to take it from them. And it's... You know, bad calls have helped VCU.
Yeah. A million times.
A million times. It goes, you know, it goes both ways, and that's... This is something I said, like, the nice thing about basketball games is you play almost 40 games a year, you know, you play 35 to 40 games a year. There's so many independent events in a basketball game that it's not like a college football season where, like, one bad call can derail your entire season, or it's not. You know, that's definitely true in March when you're playing elimination, but it's just, that doesn't happen that much, which is definitely one of the things that draws me to the game.
Yeah.
And so I think even when there are bad calls, let's just get over it and... Or my natural inclination is to, like, feel really bad about it for 5 minutes and then sort of get over it. Because if not, nothing good comes from it.
And I think it would have been... I would have been more on board the, like, the refs stole the game from us, or, like... And there was also some narrative, too, about how the dude had... How do you say his name? He had four fouls.
Oh, Kansas. Yeah, that's a huge part of the game.
He had four fouls, and so he goes up, and, like, if he picks up another foul, he's ejected in the last minute of the game. And VCU is now tied the game if Graham makes the free throw.
Yeah.
And so, like, there was a little bit of like, oh, they didn't want to eject this guy from the game, so didn't call foul. And, like, I just don't know. I forgot where I was going with that. But, like, it's like a bitter... It got bitter, you know? It got angry and in a weird way... I don't know what I'm trying to say. It just felt like the vibe shifted, and it would have been different if the Rams would have played hard for 35 minutes, and then that happened. I feel like then you're like more entitled to feel that way. But when, like, you kind of play terrible, for 35 minutes, and then Graham makes this incredible comeback basically on his own, and you don't get the call to go your way, like, there's not a place for that venom, I don't think.
Yeah,
there's probably not a place for the venom. Regardless.
Yeah. I mean, it's everyone's trying to do their best. I mean, if you go inside the NCAA rule book, one of their, like, three or four objectives this year, they talk about the arm bar and off-ball contact and all these other things you've heard about the backcourt violation stuff. They want to do a better job, and one of the better things they're trying to do is the charge block. And I don't like the call. They hopefully 5 years from now look back at this and like they'll have it figured out, but they don't have it figured out yet.
Yeah.
And I just think it was a bad call. You know, it's an intense moment. You know, it's just everyone's trying to do their best. Khalil Kenneth is trying to do his best to stop the play. Trayvon Graham's trying to do the best to score. The refs doing the best they are to try to get it right. Instead of dwelling on that one call, I want to say, you know, I think VCU is such a good team, and like I love them so much that anytime someone beats them, I have to give them I've got to give them some credit. Because if not, it's selling your own team short, and it's selling their performance short. And it's like every time VCU gets a big win, I hope people have the same reaction. You know, it's just like.
That was a hat tip motion.
Hat tip, horn tip, tip of the horns. I mean, so I had a really interesting experience. I was in at the Michigan Appalachian State football game when Appalachian State upset Michigan.
The game,
yeah. And I was I mean, that's a historic fan base, you know. And if anyone should feel entitled to anything, you know, the team that's won a million national championships and had so much success that I think they were number three in the country at that point should. And it really was incredible to me. I mean, they were a little bit condescending when we were going in there, you know, and like, you know, having fun with us. But then after the game, how okay the fans, it was like, wow. Like, that was incredible. Just like, and so I think there's something to be said for losing with grace.
And that's how you, like, Michigan is not an underdog in football.
No.
And they're not. They won't ever be for the foreseeable future, you know? And, like, if you don't believe that you're awesome, that you don't react that way like those Michigan fans reacted. Right. They react that way because they know that they're awesome. Like, they know Michigan is a great program.
And so for them to lose, it's like, man.
I liked what you said. Like, it's selling your own program. Sure. Yeah. So when there's this, like, vitriol about these losses, it feels like it takes away. Like, I want, like, I know that, like, you got a little bit of like, are you even a fan? Like,
people are saying that to me, and it's like,
which
don't even know me.
like if you knew this guy, he's the biggest fan I've ever met in my entire life. But like, maybe it's like, hey, like the more, like if you're really a fan, like you gotta, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
it was weird.
I respect the team so much that anytime someone beats them, I have to respect the opponent.
There you go. That's what I was trying to say. That was good. That was a little bit of a tangent. I did want to go on like another tangent. Like, now that we're here, I just wanted to get your quick opinions on the Marcus Smart thing.
Oh yeah. Well, I think there are. I mean, there is.
Well, wait, for anyone who didn't know, like Marcus Smart, he's super good. Plays for Oklahoma State. He was blocked out of bounds. He was
trying to make a block, kind of like one of those LeBron James from behind blocking the dunk layup thing. Really impressive athletic play, and his momentum carried him way up into the crowd.
And the crowd's real close to the basket. It's probably maybe like 4 feet, 5 feet back from the basket. And he landed on the first two rows, kind of on the sweeper boy.
I mean, he's basically like in this dude's like lap, basically. Yeah. And the fan was yelling something at him, and Marcus Smart shoved him. He got a 3-game suspension. You know, it's kind of a big it is a big deal. I think that Coach Smart had something good to say about it. I mean, I think there is sort of this sacred boundary of, like, players can't touch fans. Yeah. Fans can't touch players. Like, that should be a thing, and it's a good rule. And I think that should be upheld. But at the same time, I think we do need to have an honest conversation as a country. I mean, I always have this really weird thing with basketball. Like, I love it, but it's, like, this really bizarre thing to me. And it's, like, I mean, look at the SEAL Center. It's 7,700 people packed in there, screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
Kind of at this arbitrary game, sort of, in a way. And it's, like, sometimes people get personal, you know? And I think maybe it's a moment. I haven't heard anything that ridiculous in the SEAL Center, but it's always a good idea to, like, take a step back and really think about it. Because there has to be a line, and that needs to be addressed. I think we need to have, like, a national conversation about what's an appropriate way to treat athletes.
Yeah.
And so there was some talk. The fan maintains that he didn't say a racial slur. Marcus Smart says that he did say a specific racial slur. So then you have this whole added element of, like, all that sacred boundary goes out the window with the racial slur and whatnot. I think everyone's probably guilty some.
Do you think, I know you're a big fan of like Michigan State's arena where they're real close.
The Izone, yeah.
And they're I was surprised at how just close the fans are there. And it's not that way at the Steel Center at all. Like the closest people, I guess there's those dudes that sit courtside with the rest of the stuff. But most of the fans are quite a far fit back.
Yeah.
Do you, does that change your opinion of like how close the fans should be to the action to increase the, like, the level of the environment?
No, because I like to think that as a
or better
human
than
race, we can elevate above the level of, gosh, we have our college graduates, alumni, and students need to be this far away from the stadium because they don't know how to treat the athletes. No, I like to think that we can rise to a level above that. Doesn't mean we're there now. Clearly we're not. But, I mean, should we put a cage around the basketball court so people can't throw stuff on the court? Should we, you know... No, I just think it's unfortunate that that happened, but I think it's a moment that, like, hopefully Marcus Smart can learn from, and hopefully that fan can learn from, who now, from what everything we're hearing, has had quite a history. You know, people who have played in that stadium are familiar with this one specific guy for the things he said. Hopefully that guy can learn something from it. Hopefully we can all learn something from it. And just sort of elevate to a higher level.
That was well put, Aaron. I like that. I kind of threw that out at you unprepared. That was nice. You want to do trivia? Less intense.
Let's talk about boring games, losing games, upset fans.
And racial slurs.
Racial slurs, yeah.
Gosh. All right, let's do trivia. Cue the saxophone intro music. Here we go. Trivia question. These are actually kind of sad trivia questions. Trivia question number one. When was the last time Rob Brandenburg had three or fewer points in a game?
Oh, man. This goes back to what I was just saying I should look up. I'm guessing it was on more than one shot. I'm guessing January of his sophomore year.
Rhode Island game.
Wait.
He had 3 points.
In the Rhode Island game, too?
Yep.
Oh, man. I could not have been more wrong on that one.
So he had 3 points against Rhode Island.
Really?
For the win. He had 2 points against Northern Iowa. He had 2 points against St. Louis regular season last year.
Yeah.
3 points against Fordham, and then 3 points against the Wichita State loss last year.
Man, I'm seeing a trend there.
Yeah. So I don't know what that means. Question number two. Can you name the three games this year that Breonte Weber had fewer than three steals?
Well, it's the past two games.
Yep.
Oh, man.
So that's St. Joseph, Rhode Island, and...
Did you say three or four, sir?
Three.
Was it the Northern Iowa game?
It was Wofford.
Wofford.
Yeah. And then if you go back last season, he had nine total games.
With one steal?
With three or fewer.
Three or fewer, okay.
A couple games with zero steals. He doesn't have any with zero steals this year. And that's crazy. Like you said, they played... How many games did they play last year?
36.
So, and he had nine games with fewer than three steals. The guy's crazy. Guy's real great at his job. All right, question number three. I don't know if you know this. Do you know what the weather forecast is for Wednesday?
Yeah, I've heard everything from rain to 20 inches of snow.
Yeah, I saw there was a weather map. Scott sent me a weather map that said we would get 20 inches of snow.
Scott Farr?
Yeah, and he's into the weather stuff. That's like his jam.
I can't get my hopes up with that stuff because I get so into it.
The low I've seen is 10 to 12 inches.
Man. So, call my parents in Detroit and all the times they are condescending to me. Like,
what happens in Richmond if we get 20 inches of snow? We just give up, right? Like, we just quit.
Well, I mean, no. Not if we, I mean, the threat is there. So I imagine things will probably start shutting down 36 hours in advance. I mean, did Chesterfield County even go to school today?
Yeah, So question number three, with the impending snowstorm on Wednesday, which is when George Washington will play in the Siegel Center, what is the all-time one-day snow record for Richmond?
Oh, man. You can 24-hour window? Or?
Yeah, it's not 24-hour window. I couldn't find 24-hour
window. It's like sunrise,
window.
It's midnight to midnight?
Single day, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. 14 inches.
It's 19.9 inches.
Oh, my goodness.
Back in 1940. But there are some recent ones that make the top 10 list. So
96, is that when the big one was?
That's what I thought, too, and it's not on this list. I got this list from Weather Dan, so if it's made up, blame him. He's at WXDan on Twitter. You can blame him. In 2000, we had 11 inches. And then in 2010, we had 9.5, which for the life of me, I cannot remember.
2010 was awesome. I was a senior in high school, okay. And like we didn't go for like a month or something like that. And that was an awesome snow because it was so wet. Like, we made like an 8-foot-tall snowman.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that's what I... Because, like, the snow we got in this year has been really...
Yeah, too powdery.
Yeah. Like, so, if we're waiting in line... If you're waiting in the snow to get into line, throw some snowballs, but don't throw too many.
Yeah, don't get kicked out of line.
Don't get kicked out of line.
And so, I don't know what that means. Like, I guess the team... Like, both team... Like, George Washington will be here by before the snow starts. So, they'll be in Richmond. But if it's 20 inches of snow... And it's supposed to start, I think, Wednesday afternoon. So there will be, I think, snow on the ground. Or at least rain, cold rain. I don't know.
I should look because... I mean, there are probably rules. If the weather's bad and VCU cancels evening classes, I imagine they can't have the game. My parents went to the Michigan State-Indiana game. And there was, like, who knows, 4 feet of snow or something. Not really, that's an exaggeration, but... Michigan State went out of their way to open up school at 5 p.m.
So they could
have the basketball game. Who knows if kids even went to the classes. But so I imagine there's some university policy on it and all.
That would be interesting to figure out.
Look it up.
I also wanted to know, and we'll see what the result of Wednesday's game is, but there have been a couple good snow games.
Mm-hmm. The St. Joseph's game last year, mm-hmm. the Troy Daniels 0-for-9,
yep.
hits the 10th, Darius Theus. I didn't realize Darius Theus hit a 3-pointer in that game too. That was the second one. Sorry.
It would be. I don't know how to track that. I wonder if Scott Day could pull us single center records during the snow. Would be interesting. So that was three trivia questions, and then we'll do prognostication too, since I remembered this week.
Yeah.
I got two. I want you to make two predictions.
I've been doing so well.
Yeah,
now you want to trip me up.
Let's recap. So you said, what was the first one?
Nelson Adota, blocks. I said 4. I think he had 3 in the first 10 minutes of the game before he got into foul trouble.
Yeah, so that was real close. And then last week, it was turnovers Rhode Island would have. And you said 22. And they had 11 at the half and finished with 20.
20, yeah.
So that's freaking close. That's
if
really
they had played their starters more. I didn't realize they were going to go so bench heavy, you know. And then I was looking into my crystal ball over here.
Okay, so first one I want you to do is how many points will Patricio how do you say his last name?
Grino.
Garino.
I think so.
Patricio, the big guy that caused so many problems.
6'6", 8-foot wingspan.
And he had
1-3-1 zone.
What did he have? How many points did he have? He had like 20-some points against
Yeah,
Patricio.
Here, let's see.
So how many points will he have in the rematch?
He had 25.
Let's call it the showdown in the snowdown. Does that make sense? No, that's not very good.
Showdown during the snowdown in the stew or something.
Yeah, we'll get a name for it.
Some consonants opportunities there.
So how many points will that guy have in the rematch?
4.
Whoa! All right, I like it. We have learned our lesson.
I think it's a two okay. thing. In the half court there, he's going to have a big target on his back, first of all. Not in the... Or anywhere, anything like that. And also, I don't expect them to turn over the ball quite that much. A lot of his points came from him forcing steals and getting points in transition. And I think it'll be like a double thing. You know, they're going to guard him way harder in the half court, and they're not going to make those same mistakes again. And it's going to be in the steal.
Okay, and then the second one, and then we'll move on to George Washington, just talk about that in 1 second. How many turnovers will Jordy or Jet have against VCU? He had if you remember last year, he had a great regular season game against VCU. I think he only had like 2 turnovers. And then in the A-10 game, I'm not sure he had a great... I don't think he had a standout memorable game in the tournament game last year against VCU.
He had 1 turnover in 25 minutes in the first game, and he had 2 turnovers in 24 minutes. But that, you know, that was when Kwame Mitchell was the starting point guard. I mean, Jordy or Jet came off the bench for St. Louis last year. That blows my mind. How many turnovers do I think he'll have?
Yeah.
3.
Okay.
But I think he's going to play a lot of minutes. We'll talk about this. I'm not the most optimistic person in the world about that game.
So let's move into George Washington. Wednesday, the still can't think of a name. The snowy day. I'll get it.
Snowdown showdown.
Yeah, I really want to go with that snow show rhyme. It's not working. The first question I want to ask, and you can just do a general thing, but I'm really interested to see, are they going to play the 1-3-1 zone against us again?
well, how do you not after that?
Right. And so, and what have we learned, and what's the strategy, and like, oh my God, like, are we screwed?
Well, the strategy is the same strategy for every single game, and that is score so many times in transition that the half-court off, that the Rams' half-court offense does not become an issue at all. Well, I think I'm not sure if they're going to do that much better against the 1-3-1 zone. I just think we're going to see it less, and I think part of that has to do with I don't think that George Washington will score quite so effectively, and I also, you got to remember that they're going to be without Keaton Savage,
yeah,
who is their second leading scorer. He's got an injury. He's out for 6 weeks, I think.
And he was injured just after the
yeah, it was the next game, mm-hmm. I think, and or it might have even been in practice right after that. So they're down a guard. You know, Joe McDonald's good. I was just talking to you about how Maurice Creek had a terrible game. So I think VCU will be way more effective in transition, and it's a stew. So I think the 1-3-1 will be less of a factor. That doesn't mean that VCU is going to be necessarily be more effective against it.
Did you think, and this was the one takeaway I had from the Rhode Island game, that it seemed like there's a lot more passing going on. And I don't know if that's just because I started to notice it and then I noticed it more, yeah. But it seemed like there was less swing the ball around the perimeter, which swinging the ball around the perimeter against that 1-3-1 zone with Patricio Guarino standing out in the front was awful. Like, it was...
Yeah, it disrupts all their offense. It disrupts the weave, like, all the ball screens. Yeah, it's really annoying.
So maybe that gives hope. There was lots of inside passes. It's interesting, like...
Well, that was super deliberate because they knew... Rhode Island doesn't really have any depth. They especially don't have any front court depth. So they... I mean, they only attempted not that many three-pointers in that game. They're really effective at getting the ball inside. I don't think it'll be the same way against the George Washington team because they're just in a whole different league defensively.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, the guards have always been good at passing to each other. But I always see these little things, you know, like, Malik Ox is pretty good. If he can catch the ball in the post and get a nice post move, he's pretty good at kicking it out.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'd like to see him do more. And then the thing that really frustrates me is that all their big men are the best at feeding the post. Like, every game I see, like, either Malik Cox, Terrence Shannon, or Javonte Redick have just this, like, beautiful post feed. It's something the guards can never do. I don't know if it's because they're taller and they're just more effective at doing that.
Right.
So it makes me nervous. It's how do you move the ball around? How does a team that's already, like, not that great at moving the ball around, move the ball around against it? And I just think the answer is scoring other ways.
Do you think Briante will... He's had two one-steal games in a row. What do you think? But he's looked really good running the point, I think.
Yeah, he's been pretty good. I mean, his stats are still pretty impressive. And he's had good scoring balance recently too. Yeah. Just doing a little bit of everything. It's kind of what we expected. And I don't, you know, steals, it's one of those things. It's like you can be a great receiver and have a great game but not score a touchdown,
yeah.
You know, because that's like,
it probably means you're a good receiver.
It's such a big, yeah. It's such a big event, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, they only happen a certain number of times in the game, and steals are that way. It's easier to score a basket than it is to get a steal.
Yeah.
So I think he's been playing great defense. It's just sometimes the ball doesn't bounce his way, or sometimes the stat keeper tallies it a little differently or something.
And I feel like his jump shot has been real good lately. And
yeah, he's always had that awkward mid-range jumper with his feet kick out that he seems to hit down and, like, hit awesome. Like.
And he's hitting free throws like nobody's business.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. Who do you like as your top performer in this game for the Rams? Who do you think is going to have the most success now that we've learned a little bit about George Washington? It's hard for me not to say Javonte Redick because he's on a roll a little bit.
Yeah, but Kevin Larson's...
You don't think a little extra motivation for Redick?
I want to see him play good defense on Kevin Larson before he scores points. I think Trayvon Graham.
In the first half, let's see it.
In the first half, no, he's had great first halves before. I mean, he had that one game. He had 15 in the first half, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quiet second half. No, I think, you know, he doesn't seem like he doesn't really hold on to that kind of stuff visibly. But I think he'll come out with an objective. You can write that down so you can. You write it down right now, aren't you?
I'm not writing it down. What I wanted to look up was how many points did he score against St. Joe's? Do you remember?
13, I want to say.
Okay, so he kept his 10-digit streak alive. Yeah, he did. 13. All right.
Look at that.
What else do you have about George Washington? Do you want to move on to St. Louis?
You got to win it. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
you got to win at home.
Yeah.
And you got to beat it. It's another top five team, you know, so you get double credit for those, basically.
Yeah.
Because you get the win, and then...
They get the lose.
They get the loss. They get the lose, yes.
So St. Louis. St. Louis is ranked what these days?
Are they 13th now or something like that?
Something. They're real good, man.
They're really... It's, you know, I have so much respect for them. They're everything that is right in college basketball right now. Entering the season, you know, it's all freshman hype. It's all about who's going to be the number one lottery pick or whatever, and I just don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
I like watching seniors play basketball, especially when it's a great defensive team, and no team in the country embodies that more than St. Louis. They have their five best players, I think, are all seniors. They have, you know, the legacy of Rick Majerus left behind them. They've got Jim Cruz, who, Indiana guy, you know, who had some tough times. The head coach is doing an incredible job. There's so many things right with St. Louis.
Yeah.
It's one that you just got to respect them. I know there are people out there who don't, but I'm saying they should. It's pretty impressive what they've done. They're 22-2. They've won 16 games in a row now, or is that 15? 16 games in a row. Their two losses are to Wichita State.
Who's like three.
Who's undefeated.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin, who started the season, 16-0. They've stumbled a little bit in the Big Ten, but, you know, anyone who watches the Big Ten knows that that's just the Big Ten being the Big Ten.
Yeah.
It's incredibly impressive what they do. KenPom has them ranked as the number three defense in the country. They're good enough on offense to win games, and it's scary.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, I haven't watched any of these games, but someone took them to overtime recently.
Yeah, George Mason.
George Mason did.
At home.
They had a 1-point victory over Rhode Island.
They 2-point victory over LaSalle.
Over LaSalle. And so,
heartbreaking 2-point loss for LaSalle.
So it's like you say, man, A-10's tough, but St. Louis is just real good.
Yeah, I mean, I expected them to be good. I did not expect them to be this good. They just do all the things right. It's in a lot of ways, like, defensively, they're sort of the opposite of VCU. It's, you know, it's kind of like Virginia or Wisconsin. It's,
yeah.
They just get in there. They don't make mistakes. They're really good at keeping players out of the lane. They're really good at three-point defense. It's going to be really hard for VCU to score on them in the half court.
Well, what do you do with a team that's really good at not making mistakes and also really good at preventing you from scoring in the half court? Just...
That's why Coach Mark gets paid a lot more money than I do.
And he was 0-2 against St. Louis last year.
Last year, yeah. But they're 2-2 against them all the time, I want to say, or 3-2 against them all the time. And they beat them twice.
I mean, they beat them...
In the 2010 for the CBI.
Yeah, and that was CBI to finals. Win the CBI.
Because it's best 2-3 for the finals. No, I mean, let me think.
Were all the pieces there for that CBI, the CBI wins? Like, is that the same kind of team that they are now?
No, they were so much better on offense that year. It's amazing. Oh, the St. Louis team?
Yeah, St. Louis.
Yeah, except for no. None of those guys are on the team now.
But it's the same style of play, same coach.
Well, it's a different coach, but it's the same style of play. Because Rick Majerus was their coach, and then he died.
Okay.
But, you know, Jim Cruz talked about this last year. Jim Cruz hardly feels like a coach on that team. I don't know if you remember that from the A-10. Just like... When you have that many old guys that play with a guy that's as intense as Rick Majerus, I think Jim Cruz just said he basically just sits back and watches. You know, they'll be in practice, and one guy will make a specific mistake on defense, and the rest of the guys will come over and tell them what they're doing wrong. They just have this really, really strong, like, group approach to what they're doing. And it's not going to be that way next year because all these guys are graduating. It's just as a fan of basketball, as a fan of Rick Majerus, like, I just sit back and I watch it. I take off my VCU hat and it's like, it's special to watch.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I'll be at the game. I'm going as like a fan. I decided not to get a media credential, and I'm kind of just excited to watch two good basketball teams play each other that I respect.
Yeah.
Both of them. Two coaches that I respect a lot. Two teams that I respect a lot.
How far? I mean, they're a tournament team, clearly.
Oh man.
How far deep do you think they'll go?
Well, I had them going to the Sweet 16, or no, the Final Four last year.
Uh-huh.
And they ran into, I think, Oregon, who kind of also got hot at the right time. when you play defense like that, it can be it can be so sustainable, especially come March. Man, they're going to be a really high seed, and if they get the right matchups, there's no limit to what they can do.
Wow. So tell me the like top one or two or three things that VCU has to do to keep it competitive slash win.
They got to figure out some things on the offensive end to exploit in the half court, because if you don't score at all in the half court, then you don't get to press.
Yeah.
And if they don't get to press, then they're not going to score in transition. If they don't score tons of transition points, it's going to be a really long game. I think you got to shut down Jordaire Jett. He's just a fascinating player because he's 6'1", 215 pounds, and he's really quick.
Yeah, he's a huge dude.
He's 6'1", 215 pounds.
I'm sure he gets
that's ridiculous.
I'm sure he gets the Mo Alley Cox, this guy could be a football player.
Yeah.
Commentary.
Yeah, I mean, he does. He looks like a fullback, because I've... Shows what I know about football. I mean,
that is a player on a football team.
They're usually like
yeah,
that size, though. Yeah, and I mean, for you guys who don't follow Sangles, he's a guy with the dreads.
Yeah,
and he's way quicker. And then he just I was listening to the commentators during this one game. They're like, he doesn't do anything one thing like that well. He's just like he just gets it done. And yeah. I think he had 25 points against LaSalle, including the game winning bucket. And he can just drive the lane. He's so strong that he's really tough to stop. It's going to be really interesting to see how the matchups line up. I mean, I guess you won't maybe put a guy like Jordan Burgess on him.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, because like a guy like Bronte Weber, Rob Brandenburg are going to have a tougher time stopping a guy with that kind of size. He doesn't have an outside shot, but, I mean, he can just drive the lane and just got to, I mean, he's like a point guard version of Trayvon Graham.
Right.
And then they have their version of Trayvon Graham as Dwayne Evans. You'll remember him from last year, 6'6", 230. He doesn't shoot three-pointers, but he's another guy who can drive the lane. He's really long, and he face-guarded Troy Daniels in both those games and just made him a non-factor with his length. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him,
yeah.
Who they put him on. I mean, they just had such a – in the past, I've talked about sort of this formula to beat VCU, and they pretty much perfected it. It's face-guard Troy Daniels, have the personnel to stop everyone else one-on-one. With, you know, a guy like Dwayne Evans not being part of the system, score in the half court and don't turn the ball over. I mean, it's tougher said than done, but them and Michigan pretty much perfected that.
Yeah. It makes me not super excited, Aaron.
Yeah, I'm trying to not get too emotionally invested in the game.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll show up there in my black and gold.
So you'll be there in St. Louis.
In black and gold in a week.
You'll be the one. You'll be the guy. We'll look for you on television. And that's a what is that? That's a 2 p.m. Saturday on ESPN, ESPN2. They haven't decided yet, I don't think, have they?
They probably have. I couldn't tell you right now.
And that'll make two games on ESPN in a row for St. Louis. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are already pretty high on them, but I think people are really going to start. I mean, I don't care what league you're in. I don't care who you play. 16 games in a row is really impressive.
Yeah.
And I think that gets into the whole Wichita State thing. People are still saying they don't deserve a number one seed. You're talking about a team that went to the Final Four.
Yeah.
They lost to the national champion.
And haven't lost
And yet. Now they haven't lost since the first weekend of last April.
Yeah.
And people are saying they don't deserve a number one seed. They went to the Final Four, which is like the real measure of a number one seed. I mean, you predict who's going to be the top
yeah.
team in their division. They were the top team in their region. And then they lost to the national... Then they haven't lost a game since. That whole conversation is silly. This team, it's the same way. They've lost to Wisconsin, Wichita State. The last game they lost was to a great Sweet 16 team in Oregon. You have to give them all the respect in the world.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch two games play, but also at the same time, I'm not entering this game with the mindset of if VCU loses, I'm going to feel as bad as I did on Saturday night.
Yeah. I felt many beers bad on Saturday night. But that's okay. Sports, I guess. All right. Did you have anything else you wanted
this
to talk about?
This was a dark podcast.
This was really dark. Yeah, we should have cut some of the dark stuff and, like, I don't know, maybe, like, take a quick look back at the Final Four run.
Exactly. I'll end with maybe something. Hi. Every single time that I get down on VCU is when they usually turn around and surprise me. I think the lowest point in my VCU psyche was senior day of 2011 when they lost to JMU at home.
then they went to the Final Four. They consistently made me feel good. Win or lose, you know, it's just being a VCU fan. You got to feel happy that win or lose, VCU plays such an exciting brand of basketball that you always get those moments.
Yeah. After that JMU loss, just to put it in a little bit of perspective, they played Drexel Mason, lost to ODU, and that was the...
I don't even want to talk about that ODU game.
So,
but those were all those games were awesome. I mean,
yeah.
You have the game winner against that really good Drexel team,
yeah.
Jamie Steen-Lamp at the end. You've got the Andre Cornelius, this game's already over, just beat down of a 25th-ranked George Mason.
Yeah.
That ODU game was really good, except for the chalk on the court. You want to talk about stolen games. That was a stolen game.
That chalk on the court really gets you going.
That's the one that I will have. Like, that's my emotional baggage forever. The only reason that I think people have gotten over that game is because of what happened.
Yeah.
You know, following that. But let's pretend VCU goes to the NIT. Then everyone's still talking about that.
Yeah.
I still got it, though. And I plan on bringing it up and taking everyone down with me.
Yeah, I bring it up because those teams were good. Like, Drexel and Mason were good, and that was the beatdown of Mason, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
the first half, game over by halftime.
So there's precedent and hope for for springing back.
Always.
Always.
I mean, this VCU, you can't give up hope, ever.
Yeah. All right, so that's...
Go Rams.
Yes, God. When is the game... When's tip on Wednesday? Do you know?
I think it's 7 p.m.
Okay, and then Saturday at 2 on the ESPN. And then the Rams have off until Friday or something, right?
Yeah.
They have a little bit of time
off. Yeah, exactly. Be safe. Get into the stadium.
Yeah, if there's 20 inches of snow, good luck.
I live a quarter mile from the stadium. Just give me a call if you need a place to crash.
Yeah.
I could probably fit 20 people in my bedroom apartment. The rest of you, good luck. Go Rams.
Yeah, let's do contact information real quick.
Yeah.
If you want to contact us to try to get a ride to the game when there's 20 inches of snow on the ground, or just to harass us, or to say that we aren't real fans, I'm
bring
at Moss Cater, RomssCatrow.
I'm at AW Underground. You can send me messages about me not being a fan all day long. Gets me motivated.
And you can always tweet it at RVA Ram News. And I guess that's it. There's a lot of other ways to contact us. You can check it out on the website. And go Rams.
Go Rams. Oh, I want to share this quote, but I didn't. This was Javonte, right? I think a lot of guys weren't on the same page. We had guys thinking about themselves and not bought in. I think this is a reality check for us that we're not as good as we think we are. We've got to go back and prepare for George Washington.
Read it again.
I think a lot of guys weren't on the same page. We had guys.
This is the speaking?
Javonte Redick.
Whoa.
I mean, this is the guy who after losses usually, understandably, hangs his head and isn't very vocal. I think we had a lot of guys that weren't on the same page. We had guys thinking about themselves and not bought in. I think this is a reality check for us that we're not as good as we think we are. We've got to get back and prepare for George Washington.
Wow.
I never heard that from him. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, what does that mean? I wonder. There was a weird malaise. I just felt it didn't feel right from the get-go.
No, yeah, I agree with that. This is another one. This is Coach Smart. I'm not allowed to comment on the officials, but obviously that's a call you'd like to get, and it's one you should get.
I've seen him upset, but like he was, I think, intelligently restrained by assistant coaches and players because at that point it was still just 3 points, and you don't need to tack on. I guess it wasn't. They went and shot free throws after that, but did they? I can't remember, but you don't want a technical at that point. That would have been game-ending as well.
That would have been a Chris Mooney.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that game was over before Chris Mooney went off, and I respect him. Yes, it was. It was. The first technical, maybe not. The second.
Yeah, it was over on the second technical because of the first technical.
because of a bad call.
Yeah, yeah.
It was because of a bad call that put the game out of reach, because it was that foul on the 3-point attempt, 40 feet in the net. Perrier, Henry.
Yes, yeah. And, but
so that was the call that put the game out of reach, which caused the first technical.
Yeah, but the game was out of reach.
The game way out of reach.
Yeah, the game was out of reach when he technical. It was already
the second
done.
Time.
It was already, no, the first time. It was already done. The foul
was
already called.
Oh, because of that call. Yeah. So you're saying Coach Smart should have...
No, I'm saying the Coach Smart and the team handled it well. Like, you don't. Yeah. I don't think you want two technicals. Maybe you do. I don't know.
My favorite quote. These are all from the Tim Pearl thing. They called a charge, so he had to keep playing. Who do you think said that?
Trey Younger.
Yeah.
Classic. That's good.
I love that dude. Like...